The child was born to them both in their final years, and they circumcised him at once on the eighth day. And from that time, the Jews have kept the custom of performing circumcision after that same number of days, while the Arabs do so after the 13th year. For Ishmael, the founder of their nation, born to Abraham by his concubine, was circumcised at that age. Concerning him, I shall set out the whole account with great care. As for Ishmael, born to her slave Hagar, Sarah at first loved him no less than a mother loves her own son, for he was being raised with a view to succeeding to the headship of the family. But once she herself had borne Isaac, she thought it wrong that Ishmael, being older and capable of doing harm, should be raised alongside him once their father was dead. She therefore urged Abraham to send him away, with his mother, to settle elsewhere. At first he would not agree to what Sarah was so intent upon, thinking it the cruelest thing of all to send away an infant child and a woman without means of support. Later, however, since God too was pleased with what Sarah proposed, he yielded and handed Ishmael over to his mother, the boy not yet able to travel on his own, and told her to take water in a skin and bread and go, guided only by necessity. As she went, her supplies ran out and she was in distress. When the water failed, she laid the child, gasping for breath, beneath a fir tree, so as not to be present when his soul departed and went on further off. A divine angel met her and pointed out a spring nearby and told her to look after the boy's upbringing, for great blessings awaited her through Ishmael's survival. She took courage at this promise and, falling in with shepherds, escaped her hardships through their care. When the boy had grown to manhood, he took a wife of Egyptian stock, from where his mother herself originally came, and by her 12 sons were born to Ishmael: Nabioth, Kedar, Abdiel, Massam, Masmas, Ijumas, Masmas, Chatham, Theman, Jeter, Naphs, and Kedmas. These occupy the whole region reaching from the Euphrates to the Red Sea, which they named Nabatene. It is they who give their name to the Arab nation and its tribes, both for their virtue and for the honor of Abraham. As for Isaac, his father Abraham loved him above all things, being his only son and a gift granted him by God in his old age. And the boy himself invited still greater affection and love from his parents by pursuing every virtue, devoted to caring for them and zealous in the worship of God. Abraham placed his own happiness in nothing, but leaving his son unharmed when he departed this life. This, however, was not to be granted him according to his own wish, for God, wanting to test his devotion, appeared to him, and, after listing all the blessings he had bestowed upon him, how he had made him superior to his enemies, how his present prosperity, and his son Isaac too, had come to him through God's own care, asked that Isaac be given to him as an offering and a sacrificial victim, commanding that he lead him up to Mount Moriah and, building an altar there, burn him as a whole offering. In this way, God said, Abraham would demonstrate his devotion if he valued what was pleasing to God above even the life of his child. Abraham, judging it wrong to disobey God in anything, and holding that all things that come to those he favors happen through his providence, concealed from his wife both God's command and his own resolve concerning the sacrifice of the boy, and told none of his servants either, for he would have been hindered from carrying out God's service. Taking Isaac with two servants and loading a donkey with what was needed for the sacrifice, he set out toward the mountain. For 2 days the servants traveled with him, but on the third, when the mountain came into view, he left his companions in the plain and went on with the boy alone to the mountain on which King David later built the temple. He carried, and everything else needed for the sacrifice, except the victim. Isaac was 25 years old, and as he was building the altar, he asked what they meant to sacrifice, since no victim was at hand. Abraham told him that God would provide one, since God was able to supply men with abundance even from what did not exist, and to take away what did exist from those who trusted in it. So God, he said, would give a victim even to Isaac himself, if he meant to be present at the sacrifice with favor. When the altar was ready, and Abraham had brought up the wood and everything was prepared, he said to his son, "My child, I asked for you with countless prayers from God, and since you came into the world, there is nothing I have not lavished on your upbringing, nor anything by which I thought I would be happier than to see you grown to manhood, and when I died, to leave you as heir of my rule. But since I became your father by God's will, and since it is again his pleasure that I give you back, bear your consecration nobly. For I yield you to God, who has judged himself worthy of this honor from us, in return for the favor he has shown me as ally and helper in everything I have achieved until now. Since you were born only to die not in the common way of life, but sent ahead by your own father's hand as a sacrifice to God, the Father of all, by the law of sacrifice, I think it right that you, whom he has judged worthy, should be released from life neither by sickness, nor by war, nor by any of the other misfortunes that commonly befall men, but should pass, amid prayers and sacred rites, into the hands of that God who will receive your soul and keep it by himself. You will be to me a guardian and comfort in old age. That is why I raised you with such special care, since I offer you to God in place of yourself. Isaac, being the son of such a father, was bound to have a noble spirit to match, and he received these words with joy. He said it would not have been right for him even to have been born at all, if he meant to reject the judgment of both God and his father, and refuse to offer himself readily to the will of them both, when even the will of his father alone, had it been the only one urging this, would have made disobedience unjust. So he rushed to the altar and to the slaughter. And the deed would have been carried out, had not God himself stood in the way. For he called out Abraham by name, crying aloud, and stopped him from slaying his son. God, he said, had not commanded the sacrifice of his son out of any desire for human blood, nor because he wished, having made Abraham a father, to rob him of his son through such an act of impiety, but because he wished to test his disposition, to see whether even under such a command he would obey. Now that he had learned Abraham's eagerness and the depth of his devotion, he was pleased with what Abraham had offered him, and would never fail him or his descendants in every care. His son would live to a very great age, live in happiness, and hand down a great dominion to good and legitimate children. God foretold, too, that their line would grow into many nations and increase in wealth, that an eternal memory of them would remain with the founders of those nations, and that once they had conquered Canaan by arms, they would be the envy of all mankind. Having said this, God brought forth a ram out of nowhere for them to sacrifice. And they, beyond all hope, having recovered the boy, and having heard the promise of such blessings, embraced one another, and after the sacrifice returned to Sarah and lived happily in all that they desired, since God worked with them in everything. Not long afterward, Sarah died, having lived 127 years. They buried her at Hebron, the Canaanites consenting, and even publicly heaping up her tomb, though Abraham bought the plot for 400 shekels from a cert Ephron of Hebron. There Abraham and his descendants built their family tombs. Later Abraham married Keturah, by whom he had 6 sons, sturdy in labor and quick of understanding, Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. These 2 had children. To Shua were born Sabak and Dadan, to Dadan, Latusim, Ashurim, and Lurim. To Medan were born Epher, Ophren, Hanok, Abida, and Elda. For all these sons and grandsons, Abraham arranged expeditions of colonists, and they occupied the troglodyte country and the parts of Arabia Felix that reached to the Red Sea. It is said that this Ophren made war on Libya and took possession of it, and that his grandsons, settling there, named the land Africa after him. My account is confirmed by Alexander Polyhistor, who writes as follows. Cleodemus the prophet, also called Malchus, who wrote a history of the Jews in agreement with Moses their lawgiver, says that Abraham had many sons by Keturah, and he names 3 of them, Japhron, Shurs, and Japhers. From Shurs, he says, Assyria took its name, and from the other 2, Japhras and Japher, the city of Ephrah and the country of Africa were named. These men, he says, fought alongside Heracles against Libya and Antaeus, and Heracles, marrying the daughter of Japhron, had a son by her named Diodorus, from whom was born Sophon, from whom the barbarians are called Sophaces. When Isaac was about 40 years old, his father Abraham resolved that he should marry, and sent the eldest of his servants to court Rebekah, daughter of Bethuel, the son of Abraham's brother Nahor, binding him with solemn oaths. The oaths were taken in this manner. Each placed his hand under the other's thigh, and then they called God to witness what was to come. Abraham also sent gifts for those in that country, since such things were rare or wholly unknown there. Setting out, the servant, because Mesopotamia was hard to travel, in winter from the depth of mud, in summer from lack of water, and also because of bands of robbers there, which travelers could not escape unless they were on guard against them, came at length to the city of Haran, and finding himself in the outskirts, he met a number of young women going to draw water. He prayed to God that Rebekah, whom Abraham had sent him to court for his son, might, if this marriage was to be accomplished as Abraham wished, be found among them and be made known to him in this way. That when he asked the others for a drink they would refuse, but she would give it to him. With this thought in mind, he went to the well and asked the young women to give him a drink. When the others turned away, saying they needed the water for their own households and could not spare it for him, for indeed the water was not easily drawn, one of them all rebuked the others for their unkindness to the stranger, saying that they could never share anything with other men if they would not even share water with him, and gave it to him kindly. He, now full of hope for everything but wishing to learn the truth, praised her for her noble birth and her kindness, since she had not shrunk even from personal effort to help one in need, and asked whose daughter she was, and prayed that her parents might have joy of so fine a child, and that she might be married, he said, as would delight them, into the household of a good man, to bear him legitimate children. She did not begrudge him this knowledge either, but told him her family as well. "I am called Rebekah," she said, "and my father was Bethuel, but he is now dead, and Laban is my brother, who together with our mother looks after the whole household and watches over my maidenhood." Hearing this, the servant rejoiced at what had happened, and at what had been said, seeing that God had so plainly favored his journey, and bringing out a necklace and some ornaments, such as are fitting for young women to wear, he gave them to the girl as a reward and gift for the kindness she had shown him in giving him drink, saying it was only right that she, who had proved herself good beyond so many other maidens, should receive such things. He also asked to be lodged with her family, since the knight was already taking from him the chance to travel farther, and, presenting the costly women's ornaments he carried, he said he trusted them no less securely than those to whom he had already given proof of himself. He said he could infer, too, the kindness of her mother and brother from her own character, and that they would not be displeased by it, and that he would not be a burden, since he would pay for their hospitality and use his own means for his expenses. She, as to the kindness of her parents, told him he had guessed rightly, but reproached him for supposing them so mean-spirited, since they would share everything without payment. She told her brother Laban first, however, and only then, with his consent, said she would bring the stranger home. When this had been arranged, she led the stranger in. Laban's servants took charge of his camels and cared for them, while he himself was brought in to dine with them, and after dinner he said to the girl's mother, "Abraham is the son of Terah and your kinsman, for Nahor, the grandfather of these children, was Abraham's brother, of the same father and the same mother. He has sent me to you, asking that you give this girl in marriage to his son, who is his legitimate son and the only one he has raised as heir to everything he owns. Though it was in his power to take the wealthiest of the women there, he did not think it right to marry her, but honoring his own family, he has arranged this match instead. Do not scorn his eagerness and his choice, for by God's will everything else has met me on my journey, and I have found this girl and your household. For when I came near the city, I saw many young women coming to the well, and I prayed that I might chance upon this one, and so it has happened. Confirm, then, this marriage, brought about as it was by a divine sign, and honor Abraham, who has sent me with such earnestness, by consenting to give the girl." They, since the proposal was good and welcome to them, understood it to be the will of God, and gave over the daughter on the terms he asked. Isaac married her once the matter had come to him, for the sons of Keturah had already gone out to their colonies. Not long after, Abraham also died, a man supreme in every virtue and honored by God as his devotion to him deserved. He lived in all 175 years, and was buried at Hebron alongside his wife Sarah, by his sons Isaac and Ishmael. After Abraham's death, Isaac's wife conceived, and as her womb grew larger, she became distressed and inquired of God. He told her that Rebekah would bear twins, that the children would give their names to nations, and that the one who seemed the lesser would come before the greater. Soon afterward, in fulfillment of God's prediction, twin children were born to her, of whom the elder was unusually hairy from head to foot, while the younger, as he came forth, held onto his brother's heel. The father loved the elder, called Esau after his hairiness, for the Hebrews call hair Esau, while Jacob, the younger, was dear to his mother. When famine struck the land, Isaac resolved to go down to Egypt, since that country was fertile, but at God's command he went instead to Gerar. There King Abimelech received him as a guest and friend, out of regard for his friendship with Abraham, and showed him much goodwill at first, but was prevented, out of jealousy, from letting him remain there entirely. Foreseeing that God was with Isaac and favoring him with such great care, he drove him away. Isaac, having experienced this second reversal from the envious Abimelech, withdrew for a time to a place called the Valley, not far from Gerar. But while he was digging a well there, shepherds fell upon him and fought to stop the work, and since he did not wish to contend with them, they seemed to have prevailed. He withdrew and dug another well, and when other shepherds of Abimelech's again used force, he abandoned that one too and withdrew, wisely securing his own safety. Then, when the digging of a well was at last left unhindered, he named it Rehoboth, a name that means wide space. Of the earlier wells, one was called Esek, which one might render strife, and the other Sitna, meaning enmity. Isaac's power now grew through the greatness of his affairs, and Abimelech, thinking Isaac was growing strong at his expense, their living together having already grown suspicious, though without open hostility, until Isaac withdrew, feared that his earlier friendship with Isaac would be of no use to him in defending against retaliation for what had been done, and so made a fresh alliance with him, bringing along one of his generals, Phicol. Having obtained everything he asked, on account of Isaac's kindness, Isaac preferring an older favor to a fresh grievance, one shown to both himself and his father, Abimelech departed for his own country. Of Isaac's sons, Esau, whom his father favored above all, at the age of 40 married Adah, daughter of Elon, and Aholibamah, daughter of Beeri, both leading men among the Canaanites, taking full authority over his own marriage and consulting his father not at all, for Isaac would never have permitted it had his opinion been asked, since it gave him no pleasure to form a family connection with the natives of the land. But not wishing to alienate his son, he refrained from ordering him to give up the women, and chose instead to stay silent. When he had grown old and had lost his sight entirely, he called Esau to him, and speaking of his old age, said that even apart from his blindness and the affliction of his eyes, it kept him from serving God as he wished. And he bade him go out hunting, and having caught whatever game he could, prepare a meal for him, so that afterward he might entreat God to be his ally and helper throughout the rest of his life, saying he did not know when he would die, and wished, before that time came, to have God grant him this through prayers offered on his behalf. So Esau set out for the hunt. But Rebekah, wishing God's favor to fall on Jacob and against Isaac's wishes, told Jacob to slaughter some kids and prepare a meal. Jacob obeyed his mother in everything, having learned all this from her. And when the meal was ready, Jacob wrapped his arm in the skin of a kid, so that his father would believe from the roughness that he was Esau. For though he resembled his brother in everything else, being his twin, in this alone did they differ. Fearing that if he were caught cheating before the blessings were given, he would provoke his father to do the opposite, he brought the meal to his father. Isaac, noticing the peculiar quality of his voice, called his son to him. When Jacob held out his arm, wrapped in the goatskin, Isaac felt it and said, "Your voice sounds like Jacob's, but by the thickness of the hair you seem to me to be Esau." Suspecting no trickery, he ate the meal and turned to prayer and supplication to God, saying, "Master of every age and creator of all being, you granted my father great strength and blessings, and you judged me worthy of what I now enjoy, and you promised those born from me that you would always be their kindly helper and the giver of still greater goods. Confirm these promises, then, and do not overlook me because of my present weakness, which makes me plead with you all the more, and in your kindness keep this son of mine safe, and guard him untouched by every evil, granting him a happy life and possession of goods, as many as lie within your power to give, and make him a source of fear to his enemies, but honored and cherished by his friends." While he thought he was praying for Esau, he made these petitions to God. He had just finished when Esau arrived from the hunt. Isaac, realizing the mistake, kept silent, but Esau demanded to receive from his father blessings equal to his brother's. When his father refused, since he had spent all his blessings on Jacob, Esau grieved bitterly over the mistake. Moved by his son's tears, His father declared that he would win renown in hunting and bodily strength, in arms and in every undertaking, and would reap glory from these for all ages, and so would his descendants after him. But he would be subject to his brother. Jacob, fearing that his brother wished to take revenge on him for the mistake over the blessings, was rescued by his mother. She persuaded her husband to take Jacob to Mesopotamia to marry a kinswoman there. For Esau had already taken Ishmael's daughter Basemath to wife, since Isaac's household bore no goodwill toward the Canaanites. So, being displeased at his son's earlier marriages and wishing to please them, Isaac took Basemath in especially warmly. Jacob, sent off by his mother to Mesopotamia to marry the daughter of Laban, her brother, Isaac, having permitted the marriage out of deference to his wife's wishes, traveled through Canaan, and because of his hatred for the local people, he refused to lodge with any of them, but camped in the open, gathering stones together to rest his head on. In his sleep, he saw such a vision appear before him. He seemed to see a ladder reaching from the earth to the sky, and figures descending by it more majestic than human nature allows, and finally, above it, God himself appeared to him clearly, calling him by name and speaking these words: "Jacob, it was not fitting for the son of a good father, and the grandson of one who won great renown for virtue, to be discouraged by present circumstances, but rather to hope for better things. For an abundance of great goods awaits you in every respect, through my assistance. For I brought Abraham here from Mesopotamia when he was being driven out by his kinsmen, and I made your father prosperous, and I will grant you a portion no less than theirs. Take courage, then, and continue on this journey with me as your escort. The marriage you are eager for will be accomplished, and good children will be born to you, and their number will surpass counting, and they will leave behind them still greater sons, to whom I give mastery of this land, to them and to their children, who will fill as much land and sea as the sun beholds. But fear no danger, and have no dread of the multitude of your labors, for I take thought for what will happen to you, both now and much more in time to come." These things God foretold to Jacob. Overjoyed at what he had seen and heard, he anointed the stones, since so great a promise of good things had been made over them, and he vowed to sacrifice on them if he should return safely after acquiring a livelihood, and to offer God a tenth of what he had gained if he arrived there in this way. He judged the place worthy of honor and named it Bethel, which in the Greek tongue signifies house of God. Continuing on toward Mesopotamia, in time he arrived at Haran, and finding shepherds in the outskirts with young men and young women gathered around a well, he stayed with them, since he needed water to drink, and falling into conversation with them, he asked whether they happened to know a certain Laban still living among them. They all said they knew him, for he was not a man to go unnoticed, and that his daughter tended flocks together with them, and they wondered that she had not yet arrived, for from her he could learn more precisely whatever he wished to hear about them. While they were still speaking, the girl arrived with the shepherds coming down after her. They pointed Jacob out to her, saying that this stranger had come asking about her father. She, delighted with childlike simplicity at his presence, asked him who he was, where he had come from to them, and by what need he had been brought, and said she hoped it might be in their power to supply whatever he had come needing. Jacob, moved not by kinship or the goodwill it inspired, but overcome by love for the girl, and struck by her beauty when he saw how she was formed, such as few women of that time possessed, said, "But between me and you, and your father, if indeed you are Laban's daughter, there is a kinship older than either your birth or mine." For Abram and Aaron and Nahor were sons of Terah, of whom Bethuel your grandfather is the son of Nahor, while Isaac my father is the son of Abram and of Sarah, daughter of Aaron. Closer still, and more recent, is the bond of kinship we hold toward one another. Rebekah my mother is the daughter of the same father and mother as Laban your father, so you and I are cousins. And now I have come here to greet you and to renew the kinship that already exists between us. She, moved by memory, as tends to happen with the young, having already learned from her father about Rebekah, and knowing that her parents longed for word of her, burst into tears out of affection for her father and embraced Jacob. She said that bringing him home would be the most welcome and greatest pleasure to her father, and to everyone in the household, since he was cherished in the memory of his sister and was her only remaining tie to her, and that he would prove worth every good thing to him. She urged him to come at once to her father and to follow her as she led the way, and not to deprive her of the greater part of her joy by delaying. Having said this, she brought him to Laban, and once he was recognized by his uncle, he felt no fear, being among friends, and gave them great pleasure by his unexpected appearance. Not many days later, Laban said he rejoiced at his presence more than words could show, and asked the reason he had come, leaving behind an aged mother and father who needed his care, for he would supply him with everything and help him in every need. Jacob explained the whole reason to him, saying that Isaac had twin sons, himself and Esau, and that when Esau, through his mother's cunning on Jacob's behalf, was cheated of their father's blessings, he sought to kill him for having taken away the kingdom from God and the goods for which their father had prayed. This, he said, was the reason for his presence there, in obedience to his mother's instruction. For to all of us brothers are brothers, and my mother values kinship even beyond what is due to them. Making you and God the defense of my journey, I take courage in my present circumstances. Laban, for the sake of his ancestors and for his mother's sake, promised to share every kindness with him, and said he would show his goodwill toward her, absent though she was, through his care for Jacob. He said he would set him over the flocks and reward him with a share of their increase in place of wages, and that when he wished to return to his own family, he would send him back with gifts and with such honor as was fitting for so close a kinsman to receive. Jacob gladly accepted these terms and said he would willingly endure every labor while staying with him, for the sake of pleasing him, but asked as wages for this marriage to Rachel, both because she deserved honor from him for other reasons, and because she had been the means of his coming to him, for love of the girl had compelled him to raise the matter. Laban, delighted at this, agreed to the marriage, having wished for no better son-in-law to come along. He said he would grant it if Jacob would stay with him for a certain time, for he would not send his daughter off to the Canaanites. He already regretted the marriage connection made there through his sister. Jacob agreed to these terms and committed himself to 7 years' time, for that was the period judged fit for him to serve his father-in-law, so that by giving proof of his worth he might be better known for what he was. Laban accepted the agreement, and when the time had passed, he prepared the wedding feast. When night fell, without Jacob suspecting anything, he brought in to him the other of his daughters, the elder of the two and not so fair to look on as Rachel. Jacob lay with her in drunkenness and darkness, and only realizing the wrong the next day, he charged Laban with injustice. Laban begged pardon for the necessity that had made him act so, saying he had not given him Leah out of malice but had been overcome by a stronger obligation, that this, however, was no obstacle to his marriage to Rachel, but that he would give her to him, since he loved her, after another 7 years. Jacob agreed, for his love for the girl allowed him to do nothing else, and when another 7 years had passed, he took Rachel. Each of the sisters had a maidservant given by their father, Zilpah to Leah, Bilhah to Rachel, not slaves, but subordinate to them. Leah was tormented by her husband's love for her sister. She expected that if she bore children, she would come to be honored, and she prayed to God continually. When a son was born, and because of this her husband turned toward her, she named the boy Reuben, because he had come to her through God's pity, for that is what the name signifies. 3 more sons were born to them after a time. Simeon, whose name signifies that God had listened to her. Then Levi, as it were a pledge of fellowship. After him Judah, which means thanksgiving. Rachel, fearing that because of her sister's fruitfulness she might receive a lesser share of her husband's favor, gave her own maidservant Bilhah to lie with Jacob. A child was born from her, Dan, whom some might call God judged in the Greek tongue, and after him Naphtali, meaning contriver, because of her rivalry against her sister's fruitfulness. Leah did the same thing against her sister's achievement, contriving in her turn. She gave her own maidservant, and from Zilpah was born a son, Gad, whom one might call fortune, and after him Asher, which one might call blessed, from the honor she gained through them. When Reuben, Leah's eldest son, brought mandrake apples to his mother, Rachel saw them and asked to share in them, having conceived a longing for the fruit. When Leah refused, insisting that Rachel be satisfied, since she had taken from her the honor due from her husband, Rachel, softening her sister's anger, said she would yield her husband to her that evening, for him to sleep with her. Leah accepted the favor, and Jacob slept with Leah, granting Rachel's wish. Children were born to Leah again, Issachar, signifying the one born from wages, Zebulun, meaning pledged through the goodwill toward her, and a daughter, Dinah. Sometime later, Rachel too bore a son, Joseph, whose name signifies that something further would be added. For all this time, 20 years, Jacob tended flocks for his father-in-law. After this, he asked to take his wives and depart to his own home, but since his father-in-law would not agree, he planned to do it in secret. He tested his wives as to how they felt about the journey, and when they proved eager, Rachel also took the images of the gods, which it was customary for her to worship as ancestral, and joined in the flight together with her sister, along with the children of both and the maidservants with their sons, and whatever possessions they had. Jacob also took away half of the livestock, without Laban's knowledge beforehand. Rachel carried off the images of the gods, though Jacob had taught her to despise such honor paid to gods, so that if they were overtaken and pursued by her father, she might have something to which she could appeal for pardon. Laban, learning the next day of Jacob's departure and grievously distressed over his daughters, pursued him with an armed force, pressing hard, and on the seventh day found them encamped on a hill. For the time being, since it was evening, he held back. But God, appearing to him in a dream, warned him, once he had overtaken his son-in-law and daughters, to remain calm and to venture nothing against them out of anger, but to make a truce with Jacob, saying that he himself would fight on Jacob's side if Laban, scorning his small numbers, should go against him in battle. Laban, having received such a warning, the next day invited Jacob to a conference and told him of the dream. And when Jacob had come to him, persuaded by it, Laban began to accuse him, charging that he came to me poor and destitute of everything, and I took him in and gave him a full share of my own wealth. I even joined my daughters to him, thinking this would only increase the good will he bore us. But you have shown no respect for your own mother, to whom you are akin, nor for the wives you married, nor for the children of whom I am grandfather. You have treated me by the law of war, carrying off what is mine, persuading my daughters to run away from the father who bore them, and making off with the ancestral gods, honored by my forebears and by me held worthy of the same reverence they received. And this you have done, something not even men at war with their enemies would do, you, my own kinsman, son of my sister and husband of my daughters, a stranger and guest once welcomed at my own hearth. When Laban had said this, Jacob defended himself, saying that it was not into himself alone, but into all men that God had implanted a love of one's homeland, and that after so long a time, it was only right that he should come down into it again. As for the plunder you charge me with, he said, you yourself would be found in the wrong by any other judge. For the flocks which you ought to be grateful to us for guarding, and which have grown larger under our care, you unjustly resent us for keeping even the small portion of them we hold. As for my daughters, know that they did not follow me because of any wrongdoing of mine, but out of the just devotion which wives naturally feel toward the men they live with. And it is not so much to me that they cling as to their own children. This he said in his own defense, to show he had done no wrong. But he in turn brought his own accusation, charging that Laban, though his mother's brother and the man who had joined his daughters to him, had worn him down with harsh demands, keeping him in his service for a full 20 years. What Laban had done under the pretext of the marriages, hard as it was, he called the lighter part. Worse still was what came after the marriages, and what an enemy would have fled from suffering. And indeed, Laban had dealt very cunningly with Jacob. Seeing that God favored him in whatever he set his hand to, Laban would promise to give him a share of what was born, sometimes agreeing it should be the white ones, sometimes the black ones among the offspring. But as those born in Jacob's name grew numerous, Laban would not keep his word for the present flock, but kept promising to make it good the following year, since he coveted the great increase in wealth, making promises because it seemed unlikely such numbers could occur, then breaking faith once they did occur. As for the household gods, Laban ordered a search be made. When Laban had agreed to the search, Rachel, learning of it, hid the images in the saddlebag of the camel that was carrying her, and sat upon it, claiming that her monthly courses were troubling her. So Laban gave up any further search, never imagining his daughter would come near the images while in such a condition, and he made oaths to Jacob that he would bear no grudge for what had happened, and that Jacob, for his part, would cherish his daughters. and they sealed their pledges over a certain range of hills, on which they set up a pillar in the shape of an altar. Hence the height is called Gaeld, from which the region is still now called Gilead. After they had feasted upon the oaths, Laban set off homeward. As Jacob went on toward Canaan, apparitions met him foretelling good hopes for the future, and he named that place the camp of God. Wishing to know what his brother's disposition toward him was, he sent men ahead to learn everything with precision, for he feared him on account of the old suspicion between them. He instructed the men he sent to say to Esau that Jacob, thinking it wrong to live alongside his brother's anger, had willingly withdrawn from the country, and that now, judging the time sufficient to have reconciled them, he was returning, bringing with him his wives and children along with the wealth he had gained, putting himself, together with all he held most valuable, into his brother's hands, since he judged it the greatest good to share with his brother what God had given him. This is what the messengers reported. Esau was overjoyed, and went to meet his brother with 400 armed men. When Jacob learned that he was coming to meet him with so great a company, he was seized with fear, but entrusted his hope of safety to God, and took thought, given his present circumstances, how he himself might come through unharmed and save those with him, should he have to overcome enemies bent on doing him harm. So he divided those with him, sending some ahead and ordering the rest to follow close behind, so that if those sent ahead were overwhelmed by an attack from his brother, those following would have somewhere to take refuge. Having arranged those with him in this manner, he sent some ahead carrying gifts to his brother. The gifts sent were beasts of burden and a great number of animals of various kinds, which would be precious to those who received them because of their scarcity. Those sent went at intervals, so that by meeting Esau again and again they would seem more numerous, since he expected that his anger, if it still remained, would be softened by the gifts. He had also instructed those sent to speak kind words to Esau when they met him. Having arranged all this over the course of the whole day, when night came on, he moved those who were with him. And after they had crossed a certain torrent called the Jabbok, Jacob, who had been left behind alone, met with an apparition and wrestled with it, the apparition beginning the contest. And he overcame the apparition, which then used a voice and words toward him, urging him to rejoice in what had happened and not to think he had won a small victory, but had overcome a divine angel, and to take this as a sign of great blessings to come, and that his line would never fail, nor would any man ever surpass him in strength. It told him to be called Israel, which in the Hebrew tongue signifies the one who withstood an angel of God. This it foretold at Jacob's request, for perceiving it was an angel of God, he asked it to tell him what fate awaited him. And with these words the apparition vanished. Jacob, delighted at these things, named the place Peniel, which signifies the face of God. And since from the struggle he suffered pain about the broad sinew, he himself abstains from eating it, and because of him it is not eaten by us either. Learning that his brother was already near, he ordered each of the women to go forward in her own group together with her maidservants, so that from a distance they might watch the doings of the men should Esau wish to fight. But he himself went ahead and bowed before his brother as he drew near, finding in him no treacherous intent toward himself. And Esau, having embraced him, asked about the crowd of children and the women, and after learning the whole of it, he asked that he too might now go along with them to their father. But Jacob pled the weariness of the pack animals, and Esau withdrew to Seir. For there he made his home, having named the place Hari, after his own hairiness. Jacob came to the place still now called Tents, from where he went on to Shechem, a city belonging to the Canaanites. When the people of Shechem were holding a festival, Dinah, Jacob's only daughter, went into the city to see the finery of the local women. Seeing her, Shechem, son of Hamor the king, violated her by force, and being overcome with love for her, he begged his father to obtain the girl for him in marriage. His father consented and went to Jacob, asking that his son Shechem be joined to Dinah in lawful marriage. Jacob, unable to refuse because of the rank of the one asking, yet not thinking it lawful to give his daughter in marriage to a man of another people, asked to be allowed time to deliberate on what was requested of him. So the king went away expecting Jacob would grant the marriage, but Jacob, having told his sons of their sister's violation and of Hamor's request, asked them to decide what should be done. Most of them, at a loss, kept silent, but Simeon and Levi, the girls' brothers by the same mother, agreed together on a plan of the following kind. Since it was the time of the festival and the people of Shechem were given over to relaxation and feasting, they fell by night upon the guards first and killed them in their sleep, then went into the city and slew every male, the king along with them, and his son too, but spared the women. Having done this without their father's consent, they brought their sister back. Jacob, stunned at the magnitude of what had happened and angry with his sons, was told by God, who stood by him, to take courage, and after purifying his household, to offer the sacrifices which he had vowed at the sight of the dream when he first set out for Mesopotamia. So while purifying those who followed him, he came upon Laban's gods, not knowing they had been stolen by Rachel, and he buried them in the ground at Shechem under a certain oak. Then, setting out from there, he offered sacrifice at Bethel, where he had seen the dream when he was journeying earlier toward Mesopotamia. Going on from there, when he came into the region of Ephrath, he buried Rachel there, who had died in childbirth, alone among his kin, not to obtain burial at the honored place in Hebron. Grieving greatly, he named the child born of her Benjamin, on account of the sorrow her death had caused her mother. These were all of Jacob's children, 12 male and 1 female. Of these, 8 were legitimate, 6 by Leah and 2 by Rachel, and 4 by the maidservants, 2 by each. I have already given the names of them all. From there he went on to Hebron, a city situated in the land of Canaan, there Isaac had his home. They spent only a little time together, for Jacob did not find Rebekah still living. And Isaac too died not long after his son's arrival, and was buried by his sons, along with his wife, at Hebron, in the ancestral tomb they had there. Isaac was a man dear to God and was thought worthy by him of much providential care, second only to his father Abraham, and he lived to a very great age. For he lived to 185 years and died in this way in the practice of virtue.